This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm David Byrd. In his first hours as president, Joe Biden struck at the heart of President Donald Trump's policy legacy, signing executive actions that reverse his predecessor's orders on climate change and handling of the coronavirus pandemic. With a stack of executive orders on his desk in the Oval Office, Biden signed three orders in the presence of reporters. The first mandating masks and social distancing on federal property, the second on support for underserved communities, and the third rejoining the Paris Climate Accord.
This is going to be the first of many engagements we're going to have in here. And I thought with the state of the nation today, it's no time to waste. Get to work immediately.
Biden answered one question from reporters about his letter from Trump, saying it was very generous, but would not share more details.
Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States?
Vice President Kamala Harris swore in three new Democratic senators as part of her first day in office. That means the Democrats now have control of both the White House and Congress for the first time in a decade. Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff both won Senate runoff elections in Georgia earlier this month. Alex Padilla was appointed by California's governor to fill Harris's vacant seat. Wednesday was Harris's first time presiding over the Senate. The Senate is now divided 50-50. Democrats will be in control because the vice president casts tie-breaking votes in the chamber. Democrats have a 221 to 211 House majority with three vacancies. The U.S. Senate on Wednesday approved Avril Haines as the Director of National Intelligence, making her the first of President Joe Biden's nominees to be approved. Haines takes over an intelligence community that former President Trump habitually criticized and denigrated. This is VOA News. A leader of the Proud Boys white supremacist group has been arrested for his part in this month's attack and riot at the U.S. Capitol. AP's Mike Gracia reports.
A self-described organizer for the far-right extremist group Proud Boys has been arrested in Central Florida for taking part in the violent incursion at the U.S. Capitol this month. 37-year-old Joseph Biggs faces several federal charges, including obstructing an official proceeding before Congress. The affidavit says Biggs told FBI agents he had no knowledge about planning for the riot, but on the social media app Parler, he had told followers to dress in black to resemble the far-left Antifa movement. Also arrested in Florida, 37-year-old Jesus Rivera. According to an arrest affidavit, Rivera uploaded a video to Facebook showing himself in the U.S. Capitol crypt during the siege. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The new variants of the coronavirus are presenting challenges for vaccine makers. AP's Jackie Quinn has details.
Researchers are expressing concerns about early findings that blood samples of those who have been vaccinated, tested with the new virus variants, show the antibodies didn't work quite as well as the non-variant samples. So far, Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines were about 95% effective. But for the variant strains, the response has been found to be between one and threefold less. One immunology expert says they don't want people thinking the current vaccine's already outdated, which isn't the case. He says there is still a good level of protection, but the mutations reduce how well the immune response will be able to recognize the virus. I'm Jackie Quinn.
China imposed sanctions on Trump administration officials just minutes after Joe Biden was sworn in as the 46th president of the United States. The Chinese foreign ministry said former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was among the 28 people who it said, quote, planned, promoted, and executed a series of crazy moves which have gravely interfered in China's internal affairs, undermined China's interests, offended the Chinese people, and seriously disrupted China-U.S. relations. The ministry said the sanctioned individuals and their immediate family members are prohibited from entering mainland China, Hong Kong, and Macau. It also said they and entities associated with them are banned from conducting business in China. Sino-U.S. relations deteriorated sharply after President Trump launched tariff wars against Beijing shortly after entering the White House. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials closed up 0.83%, the S&P gained 1.39%, the Nasdaq rose by 1.97%. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Joe Biden has been sworn in as the 46th president of the United States.
We will repair our alliances and engage with the world once again, not to meet yesterday's challenges, but today's and tomorrow's challenges, and we'll lead not merely by the example of our power, but by the power of our example.
We'll have Africa's reaction to the Biden inauguration. Lesotho looks forward to continued good relations with the United States. We'll have a report on President Donald Trump's departure from Washington. And Kenya's government will disarm residents of its northeastern region following the death of a senior police officer.
It is possible, actually, that in some parts of our country like that one, we have more arms that are in wrong hands. And we will conduct that exercise very aggressively soon.
And a new musical collaboration from Senegal. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Biden was sworn in yesterday Wednesday as the 46th president of the United States amid tight security and coronavirus restrictions. Wednesday's ceremony came after supporters of then-President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol building to protest Biden's election and apparently stop the certification of his election. In his speech, Biden says democracy prevailed.
My fellow Americans, this is America's day. This is democracy's day, a day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious, democracy is fragile, and at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
President Biden also promised U.S. re-engagement with the international community.
The world is watching all of us today. So here's my message to those beyond our borders. America has been tested, and we've come out stronger for it. We will repair our alliances and engage with the world once again, not to meet yesterday's challenges, but today's and tomorrow's challenges. And we'll lead not merely by the example of our power, but by the power of our example.
That was the 46th president of the United States, Joe Biden. Three former U.S. presidents, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama, were on hand to witness Biden's inauguration yesterday, Wednesday, including also former Vice President Mike Pence. Like the rest of the world, many in Africa witnessed yesterday's peaceful transfer of power in the United States on their radios and televisions. Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese human rights activist and political analyst.
I will take from that ceremony three main elements. One is America will now do everything possible to reunite the country after all these problems that happened during the Trump presidency. Two, America is back to international affairs to really develop a new way of really participating in the multilateral relationship with the rest of the world. And three, I also really learned from him that he will do everything to sustain democratic institutions in his country. And I'm posed that if he's doing that in his country, he will also continue to support democracy and rule of law in the world.
President Biden made reference to Capitol Hill takeover by supporters of then-President Trump. How did Africa react to these developments?
Well, I think from all over the continent, people felt that America now has no lesson to give to any African country. And if you recall, even after the statement made by the American government on the election in Uganda, the first comment of the Ugandan, then we have no lesson to take from the U.S. And second, also, I think all the people believe that America now understand how democracy is fragile and the need for everybody within the U.S. and outside the U.S. to really do everything to uphold democratic principle and rule of law in the world. And three, I think in Africa, people also felt that now America knows that if you want to really be a superpower, you don't need to isolate yourself. You need to continue to have a good relationship with state and to develop strong relationship with the country, because the African continent really had a lot of problem with the Trump government. Trump decided to take all its forces from the continent, from Somalia to Niger. And also, Africa is the only country that Trump didn't visit, you know, as a president of the U.S. It tells you a lot about the way Africa was left alone by the American government. And I think now that the president is saying America is back, I think it's back for everybody, and particularly for the continent, because there is a number of issues that we share with the United States, particularly the issue related to climate change. And Africa is the one that really feels the climate change at the moment. And security also is one of the areas where we can work together. He talked to you today about the need to fight against terrorism, external and internal terrorism. For the external terrorism, we know from the western part of the continent, the eastern part of the continent, now the southern part of the continent, that they are threats. And we need the support of America in terms of intelligence, in terms of information they can gather and they can give to security forces all over the continent to deal with.
During his speech, President Biden says that the U.S. is ready to reassume its role again as the world leader. I wonder, how assuring was this to, say, people in Africa?
Well, from an African perspective, you can say the first way for America to play that role is to fix first the problem that Trump created all over the continent, you know, the latest being this issue of the Western Sahara. The second being abandoning the continent in terms of security and other stuff. And the third, not even considering any aspect, you know, of African economy, African trade. African issues were for 4 years, were not discussed at the highest level in the U.S. If he wants to fix those issues, he needs first to deal with the problem that I mentioned, but also to continue President Obama started, putting Africa on the American agenda. You recall that Obama was the first to organize an Africa America meeting in the U.S. He was the first American president to visit Addis and the headquarters of the AU when he made a very, very powerful speech about democracy, rule of law, and also to continue developing trade with Africa.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese human rights activist and political analyst. He was speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Hours before President Joe Biden's inauguration yesterday, Wednesday, President Donald Trump departed Washington, D.C. for Florida, where he's going to make his home.
You are amazing people. This is a great, great country. It is my greatest honor and privilege to have been your president.
In keeping with his presidency, Trump, 74, broke with tradition and became the first president since 1869 to skip his successor's inauguration ceremony. After a short helicopter ride from the White House to Joint Base Andrews in Maryland, Trump took the stage to hail to the chief. A 21-gun salute sounded as he reached the podium. Trump has yet to concede the election to President Biden, falsely alleging widespread voter fraud. The former president will face an impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate for his words and actions leading up to the January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump supporters. Trump has condemned the violence and has defended his speech that day.
All Americans were horrified by the assault on our Capitol. Political violence is an attack on everything we cherish as Americans. It can never be tolerated.
Trump also indicated to his supporters that his time in politics is not over.
We will be back in some form.
Trump and the former First Lady, Melania Trump, traveled to Florida where they are staying at his private club, Mar-a-Lago.
So, have a good life. We will see you soon. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 21st. The government of Lesotho says it looks forward to continued warm relations with the United States under the Biden administration. Relations between the two countries have been strained due to allegations of official involvement in human smuggling and trafficking, prompting the U.S. to move Lesotho to Tier 3 on the State Department's Trafficking in Persons report. Countries on Tier 3 are ineligible for most U.S. foreign assistance. President Donald Trump last year temporarily waived the Tier 3 restrictions. Lesotho's Home Affairs Minister, Molalentwa Letsosa, says his country has taken steps to combat human trafficking.
We would like to have the warm and cordial relations we have had for quite a long time with America. So we would like to see that kind of relationship continuing under the stewardship of Biden.
The U.S. government under former President Donald Trump had been concerned about a number of issues affecting relations between Lesotho and the United States. On the issue of human trafficking, there have been allegations of Lesotho official involvement in human smuggling and trafficking, which prompted the U.S. to move Lesotho to Tier 3 on the State Department's Trafficking in Persons report. Your reaction on this matter?
Right. On the human trafficking issue, the Ministry of Home Affairs is leading the fight against human trafficking, and I'm the minister there. We have done quite a lot as far as the recommendations of the U.S. are concerned. One, they asked us to amend the Anti-Trafficking in Persons Act of 2011 to remove options for fine should a perpetrator be convicted. We have taken that amendment to the National Assembly last year. It passed. We took it to the Senate last year. It passed, and now it has received a royal assent. In other words, it is the law as we speak in respect of somebody who is convicted of human trafficking.
Did your government investigate allegations of official involvement in human trafficking?
Yeah, as I said, the police officials are very hard on the heels of those government officials who are complicit in trafficking persons. As of now, we cannot say how many there are, how many the police has found. But one thing for sure is that they are working very hard to make sure that they find such people. Once that information is available, which I think it will be very soon, it will be known.
Even though the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, also known as AGOA, is not part of U.S. Foreign Assistance Program, but the U.S. can choose not to grant Lesotho this particular preferential trade access if you do not show movement in these areas. How concerning is this to your government?
Yeah, the AGOA issue is very concerning. If we will come to a point where the U.S. government decides not to support that program in Lesotho, quite a number of Basotho who are working in the factories, garment manufacturing factories, will lose their jobs, and that will be very sad. That is why we are working very hard to make sure that we address the concerns which the government of the U.S. has regarding our performance as the country. So I hope that we will avoid such a decision. We will avoid situations where the government of the U.S. will find no option but to think of suspending AGOA. So I think we won't get there.
Molalentwa Letsosa is Lesotho's Home Affairs Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. The Kenyan government says it is ready to undertake security operation to disarm residents of northeastern Kenya in the counties of Wajir, Turkana, Garissa, and Osceola. following increased insecurity in the area. The move also comes few days after a senior security officer was killed in what was said to be a bandit attack in Turkana County. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, security experts say the government should look for a long-lasting solution, including equity in sharing the region's resources.
The community conflict in the northeastern parts of Kenya has been on increase recently as armed residents kill each other because of resources shared in the region, an issue the government is struggling to settle. Early this week, three people, including senior General Service Unit officer, were killed and 14 others injured in fresh attacks at a Lomeloin in Turkana County, an attack that left several officers with gunshot wounds. Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i said that the government will soon roll out a disarmament exercise in the region to restore peace.
Now conducting an audit of the National Police Reservists and the KPRs in that part of our country, and we are looking at how we have used those resources in the past and if we can use them better. We will soon also begin a very aggressive exercise of disarmament. It is possible, actually, that in some parts of our country like that one, we have more arms that are in wrong hands. And we will conduct that exercise very aggressively soon.
The government's audit is set to inform how and where more security resources and personnel should be added so as to restore calm in the volatile region. However, security expert George Musamali said that the many attempts by the government to disarm the residents of northeastern Kenya has failed before, and the government should look for a long-lasting solution for the region.
The communities are still fighting over resources, they're fighting over water, they're fighting over pasture, and this has turned into a deadly war that is claiming lives, destruction of property, and even economic activity in that area have been affected. This is why we feel like a long-lasting solution should be found for these feuds. Disarming alone is not a solution, because anytime we have such an operation, you'll find things will go quiet for some time because the armed rustlers will normally flee to far-flung areas where they cannot be reached by the security operators.
Musamali also said that most of the conflicts in the region have been fueled by political class, and that the porous borders in the area may make it difficult for the government to restore peace.
We've seen a lot of incitement from the political leaders, and in most cases you'll find that members of the community feel like the government is taking sides in this conflict. We also have another challenge whereby members of the Al-Shabaab have also crossed the border. We are trying to look at a situation whereby they'll join one side of the community and get involved in the fighting there. This is definitely going to complicate our security in that part. Bearing in mind that it's an area that borders Somali, you'll find that the communities have easy access to firearms.
The region mostly consists of the pastoralists who fight over pasture for their livestock. The Kenya's Interior Ministry says there is a culture in that part of the country that seems to protect negative and criminal armament that disguises as cattle rustling, but it is funded by leaders from the region who are being pursued by the government to face the law. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
A private school has opened in central Kenya for pregnant girls, teenage mothers, and their babies to ensure they get an education despite the stigma they face. Kenya's teenage pregnancies have soared by about 40% since the COVID-19 pandemic began. Brenda Molinya reports from Nairobi.
Sixteen-year-old Jacqueline, who does not want to use her real name, helps out her fellow teenage mothers tend to their babies, but she's not in a daycare center. She's at school. After Jacqueline got pregnant in August, like most young mothers, she says she almost dropped out of school until she found serene haven.
No, when you're in a class with people who are the same, you're all the same. You know, it's not hard. You're able to focus because everyone has the same challenge. So it's not hard, by the way, because you're sure your baby is fine with the match on here, and after a short while you'll be able to be with your child.
Kenya's first private school for pregnant teenagers, teen mothers and their babies opened its doors earlier this month. The students at Serene Haven either got pregnant or gave birth during last year's COVID-19 lockdown when Kenya's teenage pregnancies surged by about 40%. In the school's nearest central sub-district alone, Children's Officer Paul Ndungu says the jump in teen pregnancies has been shocking.
In 2019, maybe one or two cases. But in 2020, we are talking about hundreds of cases. And you already know there is the reason.
Kenyan officials blame students not being in schools, which were allowed to reopen this month for the first time since March. Founder and director of Serene Haven, Liz Muriuki, was a teen mother herself. She says their goal is to ensure teenagers get an education without stigma.
This school is filling a gap and a need that society had neglected for so long. Because when a girl gets pregnant, everybody is pointing at the girl.
Ruth Kirimi, a guardian of one of the students, says Serene Haven is also helping young mothers to recover their self-confidence.
They're picking up this child and telling them, hey, there's potential, you're good. Just this thing happened, we're giving you a second chance.
Even before the COVID-19 pandemic, Kenya was struggling to reduce teenage pregnancy. According to Save the Children's 2019 Global Childhood Report, Kenya has the third highest teen pregnancy rate in East Africa after Tanzania and Uganda. Brenda Molinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
During last year, musicians and DJs across Africa were forced to find alternative ways to make a living as live shows were cancelled in many, if not most, countries. Senegal's DJ Kwoteka spoke to Ricky Stryak about a collaboration with DJ Satellite and Numu Konda to produce the new song Kantolo, which speaks of hope for the future.
I've also long been a fan of Numu Konda's music, and so we managed to secure some time at his studio and went in there, the three of us, along with Abba, who's a drummer, and kind of jammed along on a frame that Satellite had prepared. So we just felt our way through and tested a few options, but very quickly Numu Konda sort of felt that rhythm and started going on. So we just started recording because it was good and fresh and ready.
How has the pandemic kind of affected West African musicians and DJs who are playing in the region, such as yourself, especially because, you know, there's been lockdowns, people haven't been able to travel. So do you think this was kind of important to create something in light of the fact that so many normal roads to creation were kind of closed this year?
You know, very much so. I have to point out, though, we started the project before the pandemic, and we finished it during the pandemic. And it's clear that the pandemic has very deeply affected the music and the whole, you know, cultural community in Senegal, in the region, and elsewhere in the world. As a result, I think in the music community, everybody turned their creative energy towards making music. And so it was a bit of a lifeline, if not financially, at least focus your mind on positive things, on constructive things, on collaborations. As to the message of the song, it's really, Kantolo is about let's party, let's get together, and let's celebrate across any kind of boundary. And Numu Konda, the griot, he's calling on different communities across the continent and beyond. And I think it kind of resonates very strongly with my vision as a DJ and Satellite as well.
That was DJ Kwoteka, an entertainer in Senegal. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. And that's it for this Thursday, January 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you will have a very good day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.